Welcome to the 2014 Polycast Christmas Special. I'm Dan Q. Grandma got crushed under a Lev tank. Ouch. Makalua.
Your poor grandpa.
Snowflakes on my windowpane. Calling Rudolph out by name. Joining all the reindeer games. It's Christmas coming home.
Also, you need to talk to your Lev tank driver, because how did he crush Grandma? It's a levitating tank.
Don't be underneath the powerful whatever magnets, et cetera, et cetera, that
I think the driver has something against Dan's grandma.
Plus, you know, even though it's hovering, you could still get pinned between it and a wall, and that would still crush you.
I've got everyone thinking about it, so win, the main team.
Got a holiday hustle for your cities.
And Mad Jin.
What?
What?
You sound like you have a guilty conscience, Madjin. Do you want to absolve yourself of whatever it is you've done wrong?
No.
This time.
But you do acknowledge that you have done things wrong, and you are not sorry for them. Okay, good to know.
Of course he's done things wrong.
Oh, you helped him, eh?
Yes. I admit it.
Picking out the perfect tree. Stringing lights of red and green. Prettiest star you've ever seen. It's Christmas.
A list. He gave us questions that people sent in and that people gave us to on CFC. I've got the first one, which was from Star of Hope, that I would like to see each host propose an addition to be included in a Christmas Eve patch, which will make Beyond Earth or Civilization 5 more festive. Also, to anyone wishing to disagree of you expressed during the show, should begin by saying bah humbug. Merry Christmas to you all.
So we have to have two specific answers, one for Beyond Earth and one for Civ 5.
I haven't thought of Beyond Earth thing yet, but on Civ 5, why not change all the resources to different holiday things? Gingerbread men, candy canes, Christmas trees instead of something else. You can leave the coal, though.
Eggnog.
Hmm.
Oh, and you can have reindeer. That's what lets you build your
camp. Yeah.
Oh, see, awesome.
The deer are now reindeer.
See, that's the proof that we have levitating tanks. Inside the tanks are a bunch of reindeer.
Technology explained.
I don't know exactly how to bring a Christmas to Beyond Earth, though. It's very science fiction-y.
Oh, I can. I will reach into the Ghost of Christmas Past to bring us to the future. We will have the leaders change their costume according to the season. Just
are they
like
all going to wear Santa hats?
Or Civ 3. You know how Civ 3, they had like Lincoln in a toga, and then you know everyone gets suits at the end? We're going to have like elves and Santa Claus stuff.
No, you see, my suggestion was actually close to what you just said, Mackie, about the Santa hat. Put them on all the aliens. All the aliens have a Santa hat.
Oh, yeah, the aliens, yeah. One of the rulers has to be a Grinch, though. I'm sure you can figure out who would be your favorite candidate to represent that.
So which one of us are you thinking about?
I was talking about the in-game characters, not you guys.
For Civilization 5, I wasn't thinking something so elaborate as the resources, but we could combine these things. That's the great thing.
Yeah.
We could combine all these suggestions. How about all of the trees on the map have decorations on them now? They're all decorated.
Are you trying to bring a graphics card to its knees?
4,000 BC Christmas lights.
But Mackie, it would be shiny.
Yeah, so it would be shiny, and then your computer would be shiny because it would be on fire.
Well, you could use a low graphic setting where it just puts different colored dots on the trees. That wouldn't cause any extra resource intensive stuff.
That's what we need.
It's my favorite time of year. Doorbells ringing, everybody's here. Barely any room in the dining room tonight.
Carl 5872. Do you think Civ 5 is now done with patches and DLC, or do you think there will be more? I've read reports on the forums of people having difficulty in multiplayer since the latest patch, and was wondering the expert thoughts if at least one more patch would be needed to fix that. Yes.
Well, they already did, so.
Is it milk Civ 5 a bit more, or on to Civ 6? Well, of course they're going to do a little bit more, but I don't know how much.
Yeah,
I'm not an insider, though. That's just my prediction. And if you think back to like how they did it with Civ 4, 3.19 came out really, really late. And so I would expect we're going to get one finalized thing one day or another for Civ 5. I don't think they are done yet.
I mean, they already fixed the MP problem that the previous patch had caused troubles. Whether or not that even fixes multiplayer, that's a completely different story. But they fixed their breaking of it.
They will attempt to fix multiplayer. We make no promises on the success of it.
Will they continue working on Civ 5? That's really up to them. And this is where we can throw in, like, Dennis's voice. It's not over till we decide it's over. If we find out that there's something that we would like to do with the product, we will continue to do it.
Well said. I predict that we will see a few. I could be completely wrong, but I think we will. And I also would not be surprised if Civ 6 is already in development. Again, spoken only as my own opinion.
Civ 6 is already in development again. What, the first time they tried it didn't work?
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see any more downloadable content for Civ 5. And by downloadable content, I mean as how we use the term DLC, what I call like lateral DLC, because technically an expansion pack is also downloadable content. And we've talked about this on the show before.
No, it's not.
Well, you can download it, so technically.
That's right, and it is content, so...
It's the best kind of threats to be, too, so you got to watch out for that.
I could see a hotfix, maybe, if the people who are still complaining about some isolated MP issues, if that is actually realized to be something that is of issue with the game as opposed to people's individual connections or setups. But I don't see any more coming down the pipe for Civ 5.
Hey, Dan, I'm about to lose my city. Do you want it?
The offer sounds too good to be true, so no. There's an unknown quantity here, and with you, probably quantities.
Well, that's yeah, I admit nothing.
If your life depended on one game of Civ 5, in which you must pick one Civ to play and have one victory condition to play for, what combo would you choose? Assuming the odds are stacked against you that much that your only shot of winning is Civ X going for victory type Y from Stormtrooper 412. Let's see. If anybody thinks that that's a life-depending thing for me, then they really picked the wrong thing. Do that with.
Imagine, suspend your disbelief and play along. It's Christmas.
Okay, so let's go with an Aztec culture of victory via violence. So we're going Aztecs, we're going culture through killing everything.
You know, your answer got better as you went along.
Yeah, typical Aztec operating procedures, yep.
I was also thinking along similar lines. I kind of hate to admit that. But... I was also thinking culture through domination, but with Assyria. Get some siege towers in there, go after some nearby cities, hopefully other civs, or maybe some city-states, and then keep on building and upgrading those siege towers, so even when they become obsolete, I can have them adjacent to my other units and still get the bonus when attacking a city. Not to mention that as I'm getting all of these cities, put some libraries in place and start working the great writer slots to even work more culture and tourism later on, and then, hey, guess what? By the time I take over the world, as we've said before on the show, we're the only culture left.
I would pick Mongolia and make Kashyyyk.
We're talking about Civ 5.
Exactly.
Okay, so there's some mod that Phil's playing with. Or...
He's playing some weird build.
Well, yeah, if my life depended on it, I would probably be willing to cheat.
Like you would wait until your life depended on it to cheat.
Well,
I mean, what?
Well, if the rule...
I didn't say there was that lower threshold, it wouldn't cheat as well. But you know, if we're talking about life depending on it, yeah, sure.
Sure, why not? And no one said in the question that you couldn't just slap it on Settler.
Well, he did say that assuming the odds are stacked against you, which one wouldn't really presume Settler will do your pick.
Can I go for plan A and just use France?
Plan A. You said France, right? Not friends.
Yes, France. Oh. Well... No, yes, yes, yes. Magin will play for me instead. Yeah, there we go.
There you go.
This is a good plan. Thank man. You, Dan.
This is a new form of cheating.
Magin is playing for your life. I don't know if I trust that.
The fireplace is burning bright, shining all on me. I see the presents underneath the good old Christmas tree. And I'll wait all night till Santa comes to wake me from my dreams. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me.
From B-Rune, what is your opinion of the new trade route system in Beyond Earth? An improvement over the old, sideways change, or a regression? What does a trade route mean to you in a Civ game? Does it bother you that trade depots are not purchasable? Compare and contrast the difference between rush buying items in a new city and trading goods to a new city to increase its food and production values. Well, let's answer the first part about your opinion, and overall, do you think it's an improvement over the old? And by old, I'm assuming we mean Civ 5 with the second expansion pack, Brave New World. So is it an improvement over the old, a sideways change, or a regression?
Ooh.
If I'm limited to those labels, sideways change?
That's about where I stand, too.
I mean, I agreed with the need to modify Beyond Earth trade routes to not be strong as they consistently were, as compared to, you know, other means of food production and science output, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think having actually trade depots no longer purchasable with energy, change from the fall patch or winter patch, I don't think it goes far enough. I would rather see that you don't have the ability to purchase trade convoys and ships instead.
That just seems like a contrived restriction out of spite to me for some reason. Like, make them more expensive if you think they're too good, but completely blocking the option is a bit of a head-scratcher to me. But to me, the biggest problem with it is still the micro, rather than anything else. It's just incessant.
Well, I think it would help if, kind of a carryover from Civilization V as well. Yes, I would like to establish this trade route. Great. Trade route comes to an end. So what do you want us to do? How about in the option when we first established the trade route to keep renewing until such a time as we tell you otherwise, similar with diplomatic deals?
And you could look at a whole yield optimization interface if you really wanted to. Like, what is that really adding to the game otherwise? An Excel spreadsheet, maybe? And a lot of clicking to see what your potential yields are? I mean, it's kind of silly.
Says the guy who played Civ 4 a lot.
Well, I was basically not an elite player in Civ 4 because I didn't do that there either.
Isn't there supposed to be a window that shows you all the available trade routes so you can just look at them?
Yeah, it does, but it's not as easy to plan out like 15 cities and where each of your trade routes are going to optimize your income or your given yield. I think that could be done significantly better than it is right now.
Well, the obvious step backwards would be the UI for trade, because Brave New World had easy sorting, easy finding of the high value that you want to use, whereas Beyond Earth doesn't.
Well, plus, you were less incentivized for huge numbers of cities in Civ 5 as opposed to Beyond Earth, which does have an impact on how the entire process feels. Optimizing 15 cities versus 4 cities, just as an example, is a big difference in the amount of time you spend doing it.
Oh, yeah, but I'm fine with that. Bigger empires.
Oh, yeah, I don't mind bigger empires. I'm just saying, when you do that, you have to keep in mind that that's going to have an impact on the usability of certain features.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's an obvious thing that most people are very all agreed to that concept, that the usability of the trade route system is a lot worse than it should be.
As far as the rush buying versus trading goods to a new city increased, those aren't mutually exclusive.
No.
Like, I don't know how to answer his question here, because you just, like, you usually want to use trade routes if you can, and then you rush by when you think it's worth your energy to do that versus something else. Like, it's not.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're going to have to accumulate a fair bit of energy in order to be able to buy one thing in one city at one moment. It's a bit of a cost-benefit analysis, right? Are you going to be farther ahead by rush buying it and putting it into the field sooner, or are you just better off waiting for it to build, you know, turn by turn?
Well, it's a separate thing, though, because what's your better alternative use or your next best alternative use of the energy is really your question, because you're going to use your trade routes either way.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is how fast do you get your trade routes up and running? And by buying trade route units faster and getting them into the cities faster, that means that you get more other yields faster, which means that you can get more trade routes faster, and you can yada, yada, yada.
Except, of course, if you're willing to pre-build your trade route units,
and then
you can't rush by a trade depot any longer, which would have been the strategy before. And
People just buy the recycling center. Yeah. They just rush buying something different so that it gets built faster.
Pretty much, yes. But yeah, anything that you can pre-build in an earlier city, you're going to do. That's like old school Civ stuff still in play.
And I think there's also the measure of comparing Beyond Earth to Civilization V, the fact now that in Beyond Earth, when you plunk down your next settlement, it's not instantly a city and you need some time for it to become a city from an outpost. That also fuels some of those earlier decisions between an internal trade route versus an external trade route as well. Because the thing is about if I send my trade route to the outpost to help it grow faster, it's going to be, as soon as it's now a city, then you're going to get prompted by that trade unit to say, hey, do you want us to continue going to this location, which is now a city? City, and here's what the output is going to be for that, what the new city is going to receive, what you're going to receive in return, your originating city, if anything, as compared to going to something else altogether.
Mm-hmm. And the way Star Hope is talking in the chat, he really wants the ability to just send the trade route, and then after a period of time, he has a choice to cancel or not. But the trade route just keeps going until you tell it to stop, which is, especially given the high volume of trade routes, perfectly legitimate request.
Yeah.
It'd be so totally helpful and stuff.
Yeah. So the end game isn't trade route management. It's actually playing the game.
Route management, the simulation.
I've seen requests for automated trade routes. I think that's interesting.
I mean, it comes with its own problems. And that's actually got to be pointed out. You can't just make a change so that trade routes are infinite until you change them, because there are a large number of calculations all based on the trade route starting, as in the yield. Yields don't change and get adjusted until the trade route comes back and gets restarted. So say you started a trade route to a city, it gets nuked, but still alive. Well, your yields aren't going to drop. Or the exact opposite. City gets like a massive boost in the yields that you're trading for. The trade route doesn't get readjusted to give you nothing either. There's a lot of buildings that you can build that adds plus per trade route. Those won't get applied until the next time you start the trade route. There is the AI that needs to be told to take a look at the trade route every once in a while to see, oh, well, this trade route is no longer giving me stuff, so I should stop sending it there. It definitely should be done. It just means that it's not a simple, easy fix.
Well, you could tell it, though, to just essentially do previous route over and over again and recalculate the yield without bothering the player, and then force the player who picks this option to go into the trade thing and periodically and look at it to make sure that nothing is amiss. Especially in the end game when you're in your runaway situation and you don't really care that much anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Then that would be a godsend. There's just no way around it. It'd be great.
Yeah, but there's other relations.
Yeah, there's a lot of other considerations. Yeah. Sure.
And frankly, due to other issues with the trade route systems, there's stuff to change too.
I see the children play outside like angels in the snow. While mom and daddy share a kiss under the mistletoe. And we'll cherish all these simple things wherever we may be. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me.
I am going to mangle this username, I think, but it's Svetkovitsa, something like that.
I think that's pretty close, at least.
Okay.
It's not insulting anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard a few over the years of my name. Yeah, okay. What would you guys like to see fixed, patched, balanced in Civ Beyond Earth? People have largely different opinions on everything, and obviously the devs can't and shouldn't implement them all. But in a well-thought-out and reasoned response, it might be more useful to them to have more direction in how the game could be improved. It says that I know Imagine has had some sort of QA tester feedback with relationship for Phyrex, so maybe his input's the most valuable.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no.
And as I pointed out in the thread, I too playtested the game, but apparently that doesn't matter. Okay, fine. I'll just sit in the corner and sulk.
You don't matter as much, Dan.
I think we kind of already answered this, at least in part, by the last inquiry with the trade route system.
Yes, one thing we would like to see fixed is the trade route.
If I was going to add something to the list, I would say diplomacy. Give me more of a reason to actually use that mechanic.
You mean aside from taking advantage of the pre-patch exploit where you could get infinite money?
Besides that.
Yeah. Okay.
What are favors worth again? I don't think they're actually worth anything.
That's how you got lots of money, because you could come out ahead by buying and selling favors, basically, before they fix that. There's really no point in detailing it now that it's gone, but...
Yeah, and they need more flavor text for the different factions in that, because they all basically say just about the same thing, except for their one or two quotes, like the Adam Smith one.
Yeah.
Funny, I think trade routes are our biggest issue.
There's other stuff in there, but the trade routes kind of stick out like a sore thumb. Quest system needs more work.
I could definitely.
It's getting a little bit better, but it needs some more work.
Mm-hmm. Just one step forward, two steps back.
They come together because opposites attract. Yeah, sorry. Some of our listeners are like, what is she talking about? Yeah, yeah, just it was the 80s. Don't ask.
I don't remember that, and I'm going to stick to that story.
Sadly, I already knew the reference you were going to make before you said it.
Well, you started it.
You said it, though.
Well, if I didn't, Dan would.
What, Mackie? I would never make a reference to Paula Abdul. Nope, never.
No, you don't make song references constantly. Nope.
Well, he didn't say he wouldn't make a song reference, just that he wouldn't do it to Paula Abdul.
That would just not be appropriate, Mackie. Why would I do such a thing?
That's why you would do such a thing, because it's not appropriate. That's why you do such things as these.
Whoa, are you saying I'm a cold-hearted snake?
See? I told you.
I hope you feel that we've sufficiently answered your question as to what would be changed in the what we would change in Shift Beyond Earth.
I would love to see the entire diplomacy system set on fire and kicked out of the game and then rebuilt from scratch. It sucks.
I don't even bother.
Yeah, well, that's why it sucks.
Yeah.
I guess the other thing I would throw in there, and this is to a lesser degree simply because Civilization V also experienced these kind of pains and maybe still virtues. It just seems to be constantly one or two virtues that are just kind of more often than not, there doesn't seem to be a lot of interesting decisions there, or as many as there should be.
I can play the same game with multiple different virtue styles fairly happily.
Well, you said happily, but not necessarily as effectively.
Yeah, effectively.
Oh, no, you said happily. No.
It just depends on what you're affecting.
To win?
Oh, you can win, with anything.
Honor every game.
See, combination of knowledge and prosperity every game.
Exactly.
That's part.
No way. Prosperity might.
Might virtue is way better than honor now.
Yeah, well.
That is one thing they changed.
All right, if we're going to go off the rails and start directly comparing virtues from Beyond Earth to social policies in Civ 5, let's just...
When are we ever on the rails?
We've been off the rails for a little while after introducing this.
I've got this Christmas song in my heart. I've got the candles glowing in the dark. I'm hanging all the stockings by the Christmas tree. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me.
I think there'll be people railing against our take on this.
Man.
Really?
Yes.
You just have to do that kind of crap every time, man. Whatever. Stormtrooper 412.
Anyway,
at what point do you all, quote-unquote, figured out the games? As Anne openly said, well, there's no need to play on difficulty level X. It's up to difficulty level Y. And let's keep the form as is, because if I remember correctly, not all of you play on deity every time. Sorry if that issue was discussed already.
Well, first off, no apologies are necessary.
Yeah, it wasn't discussed already. And even if it was, Dan would still put this in the list.
Well, we last discussed this specifically on episode 118 in May 2011, and that was before either Civilization V expansion pack or Beyond Earth was released, and heck, before Beyond Earth was even a bit in a designer's eye. I guess for me, moving up to another difficulty level is when I'm feeling that I'm consistently winning on my current level, and I'm just looking to challenge myself further or to challenge myself in a different way. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Usually. I tend to play move up if I feel like there's no chance I'd lose in single player any longer.
You're winning more than half of the games in single player, then it's probably time to move up a level. Or stop leaning on the same civ every time, I don't know which.
Or if you understand the mechanics enough that you can actually apply them consistently and get a little boring with the game.
You feel like the game has become scripted as opposed to improv?
Yeah.
I wouldn't really call switching games moving up necessarily, but that does happen too.
But otherwise, yeah.
And you know, he doesn't actually say civ specifically.
Yeah.
So,
in a specific game, I've been playing Dragon Age Inquisition. I figured out really quickly that I could play on Nightmare because the game's easy.
I was going to go old school and start talking about Commander Keen, but no, okay, that works too. Back in my day, graphics were our imagination.
Yeah.
Imagine doing a stream of a speedrun of Dark Souls soon. Just watch it. It'll be amazing.
Something about the holidays.
okay. Yeah, that's right. So Dan sent in a question.
Hey, now, I have said before on this show, this is not me. Or at least a username like this.
One crazy Canadian asked another, as a veteran of the Civ franchise, what is a mechanic that you liked, disliked, or would change for, included in the list, Civ 4, Civ 5, and BE? One game mechanic each.
All right, so let's start with Civ 4.
Oh, geez. Well, I definitely didn't like the worst enemy map hacks, so I would get rid of that. But if I had to pick one thing, I would pick the user interface screw that Civ 4 had, where you would give orders and it wouldn't happen, or you would go to click on a promotion and the buttons would move and you'd click on Auto Explorer with like an entire stack. I know that it's not really an in-game mechanic per se, but if there's one thing that really needed to be fixed in Civ 4, it was that there's just way too much with the controls that you could really screw you over. To a lesser extent, that kind of stuff was in Civ 5 for me too, but it got fixed, a lot of it, so I don't know. Beyond Earth is just the trade routes I would like changed. I missed the vassal system from Civ 4. I don't know how well it could be applied in the newer games, but I liked it in Civ 4. It was very fun to abuse vassals in certain ways.
Okay, fun to abuse, I was about to say. Are you going to make a distinction between peace vassal and...
Yeah, because I think we've had discussions in previous podcasts about how much fun, quote-unquote, peace vassals were.
Yeah, I don't think peace vassals were as good, but force vassals were amazing, and you could do some really lousy stuff with them in Civ 4. And I'm sure if they even tried to put them in either of the newer games, it would be pretty lousy, too. So there you go, that's something I really liked.
I'd be happier if the war vassals in Civ 4 were a bit more realistic in the sense of the mechanic that the AI would realize it would really be in their best interest to do that, instead of, we're doing fine on our own.
Oh, God.
Come on. You're going to make me go get that one tile ice city to get rid of you from that. Oh, God.
We're fine in our little ice city of despair.
Not even Santa will save you now.
Yeah, because they're at the South Pole and he's at the North Pole.
Well, then fine, they can pray to the armored penguins for help then.
And I like some of the tactical stuff that you get in Civ 5 and Beyond Earth, but I would also change it. It's still a little simplistic for my tastes when it comes to one unit per hex. I'm not sure which I would prefer if I had to make it a game for myself between the stacks and one unit per hex or some mix in there you've capped. I have no idea, but I would like the game to explore a little bit more difficult at the tactical level when it comes to controlling units, what units to make and all that, because the game doesn't really force you to do that a whole lot right now, and the whole difficulty moving at all is a real problem with actually doing anything in practice.
Yeah, I mean, the stack of Doom that you get in Civ 4 versus the carpet of Doom in Civilization 5, I think for me it's become grass is greener on the other side, that I look more fondly at times at the stack of Doom now that I'm playing Civilization 5 as opposed to when I was playing Civilization 4.
Well, here's the thing. Like, when you have to manually move, like, 40 units, then you start to really miss the stacks of Doom.
Yeah.
Because you used to be able to move all 40 at once. But, like, aside from multiplayer, there wasn't a lot of strategy in Civ 4 stacks. In multiplayer, there was a fair amount, if you're fighting another person anyway. You actually had some strategy. But
the fact that you have to give those individual orders, you know, now and the routing, etc., is as bad as it could be because you have less units on the map. You're just going to end up fielding less units.
Yeah.
But still, it does get grating, especially as the game goes on, because you do have more units to manage.
And then you have, like, say, an obstruction, mountain range, chasm, doesn't really matter what it is.
Troll response, if you're having difficulty managing all your units, how come you haven't won yet? It's your fault.
Well, that's why I haven't won. I'm having to give orders to 50 units a turn for like 80
50
turns.
Units a turn that I'm trying to fit through a one hex gap here and a one hex gap there. Yeah, it's totally my fault I haven't won yet.
That's exactly why we haven't won yet. We're still moving our units.
That's the secret to longevity in Civ 5 games, because how long it takes for a turn in single player. Oh, okay. Yeah, it all makes sense now.
It's working as designed. The entire gameplay is figuring out how to make your unit.
Well, we've already talked about trade routes.
Yeah.
Cheap, cheap.
I know, but it applies to Civ 5 too, because they're
and
not
Civ
as
4.
Does it? Did we? If we don't have that. Quit trying to troll me. I know they weren't there before.
Are you sure?
There were trade routes in Civ 4, Mackie.
Yes, but they weren't as annoying, let's put it that way.
No, they were not anywhere near as annoying, unless your opponent built a great lighthouse, but that was for different reasons.
You know, I know it was spammy as crap, but I liked Sid Sushi and the corporations thing, because you could have a little more flavor and you could spread it into cities you wanted to. Like, you could put the mining thing over here in a city that was mostly grassland, so you got production so it wasn't completely useless. And then, well, then of course, Sid Sushi, you just banned everywhere and everybody had food. But could we have something back that's kind of like that, where you can do a little more customizing or help out the cities that way?
Yeah, because when I answered this question, I went for extra credit. So I actually cited a like, dislike, and a change for each title. And under my change list for Civ 4 would be corporations.
Basically, your change list under Civ 4's corporations is nerfs, is sushi.
There were maps for cereal was better.
True. And being able to, what was it, aluminum that we could make if we couldn't find it? That was nice. Because we have that now in some of the, both in Civ 5 and Beyond Earth, where we've only got like two of a resource or something like that. And it's like, if we had something where we could do that. I need to build frigates, but I've only got two iron. What if I found a process to make an iron substitute to use for my frigates? Come on, guys. Seriously.
What's the name of that building a little later in Civilization V that you could end up with more sources of aluminum?
Recycling center?
For me, I talked about change for Civ 4. I like the combined leader traits in Civ 4 because then you could end up with, not all civilizations, but some civilizations would have more than one leader. And I realize that's, designers are probably thinking, oh, the balance nightmare, I understand. But the thing I really disliked in Civ 4 was the city maintenance. I much prefer what we have in Civ 5, thank you.
I like maintenance the best out of all the models because of the balance you needed.
What I really disliked in Civ 5 was espionage. Not the concept of.
No, but what you could do with it.
It is much better in Beyond Earth.
Yes, that is definitely a good thing.
Yeah, more things you could do with it, although maybe not as many things, or as often, or as easily.
Now, I would take quality over quantity every day.
I'd like to thank all the other sponsors for sponsoring me via espionage, lol.
They contribute a lot of research to our fine empire's knowledge as well.
And occasionally they even gift us units, it's so nice.
Yeah.
And Civ 5, change World Congress. It's better than it was initially. But it's still just, it's not quite there for me. Now, Beyond Earth, that's easy. What do I like? Affinities. What do I dislike? Diplomacy. What would I like to change? Diplomacy.
Let's change affinities.
I finished that first before I finished my Civ 4 or Civ 5 list.
Yeah.
Also helps that I've been playing it most recently than either of the other games.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
All right, so Matt, I guess your answers were already embedded with what the rest of us said. So then what was the second part of One Crazy Canadian's post?
Part duh. What does a someone, not just any someone, a someone, have to do to get on the show? Cheers and Merry Christmas.
Okay. Step one, send me your bank account and number.
I'm okay with just your social security number and a few.
Oh, dear.
We can do more with less. It's okay.
But in all seriousness, I mean, in a way, you are on this show, One Crazy Canadian, because we're talking about what you said. I know that's not what you mean either. Occasionally, I do invite people onto the show based in part on what they've asked in terms of us to discuss, but I also look at your participation on Civ community forums and not just Civilization Fanatic Center. I look for what you're talking about, how frequently, the quality of your posts, your ability to interact with other people in written format. Then I make a list and I send out invitations. If you've passed that first step, then there's this thing about finding a mutually convenient date and time that you're able to join us, because I can think of some people that were invited and they accepted to come onto the show, and then it took months, and in a few cases more than a year, before they were able to come onto the show, aligning when we were recording and when they were available. So that's the short answer.
Yeah. So if you're going to tweet me and ask how to get on the show, and then I tell you, you should probably follow up.
This is an example of how you will not end up on the show.
Well, it's not that he's not. It's just that he hasn't. Unless you've decided that because he's tweeted that he's not going to. Which seems kind of mean.
No. What I mean that he hasn't been on the show because he has not followed up. And he will not be on the show if he does not follow up. This was an individual tweeted Mad Jin to say, I'm watching your Turncast series. Is there a way I could possibly join the TeamSpeak to play multiplayer games and learn from you guys? So we use TeamSpeak for our multiplayer sessions now. And Mad Jin, your reply was...
To get into Turncast, a subsidiary of Polycast, you have to appear on Polycast Podcast via the Polycast first. He's easy.
That was on the 28th of October. So then on the 16th of December, I tweeted, haven't heard from you yet, Clint. Clint Oliver is his name. I says, if and when you do, we'll go from there. We've had some people said, well, I don't think I'm as good at the game as you guys. I don't play on a high difficulty level. I don't play necessarily as often, or I play other games. Gasp! Well, we invite people of all different backgrounds onto the show. However long you've been playing Civ, what difficulty level you play at, what victory conditions you type to go for, whether you're single player only or multiplayer mostly or only, in and of itself, those are not issues. And in fact, there is that diversity just to help represent just how considerable the Civ community is.
The little video things.
It's Watch Mojo.
So there were lists. We all know how much Dan loves lists. We've had this in a potential intro outro topic a few times, but ran out of time for it. So, hey, it's a Christmas special. We can't run out of time. So Dan's like, lists, yay.
Dan.
Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not 100% accurate, but you're more than 50%, so you pass, Meg.
Aha, I thought so.
I refuse to tell you you're wrong.
Well, the first one that he's posting in there is Top 10 Games of the 90s, which...
PC games, not PC just games.
Yes, sorry, I forgot the PC part of that.
The decade that saw the rise of the internet also saw some great games, both online and off. Welcome to WatchMojo.com, and today we'll be counting down our picks for the top 10 PC games of the 1990s. This list was very difficult to put together, as even with our usual one per franchise rule, and by limiting our choices to PC exclusives, we were still left with an intimidating 30 entries on the shortlist. So hang tight, this one's gonna be a doozy.
10 was TIE Fighter.
Star Wars TIE Fighter.
Yeah, Star Wars TIE Fighter. And in the video, they were actually mentioning about other flight sims, and at first I thought they were going to exclude another one, but fortunately for them, they put it elsewhere in the list, otherwise I would have been ranting about, you could have picked from all these flight sims, and you picked TIE Fighter.
Yeah, it wasn't that great of a game. I mean, yeah. Wing Commander was way better.
Commander was amazing.
The Star Wars games in the 90s got sold a lot just because, well, Star Wars.
And everybody all geeked out because, Imgur, Star Wars!
I can use a TIE Fighter.
Imgur, I get to play a TIE Fighter. I get to be the Empire instead of the Rebels and God. It's pretty much why they like this one.
So it's number 9.
Which is the reason why we're talking about this at all.
Yeah.
It's Civ. Oh, it's only number 9? The hell is wrong with you people?
Only number 9.
And why is Civ not Civ 2?
Designer Sid Meier's series of turn-based strategy games went on to become one of the most beloved franchises in all of PC gaming, but it all started with this installment. You take charge of a civilization, which starts out small, but it's up to you to build it into an empire, while also dealing with competing civilizations through warfare and diplomacy. The massive scope and endless possibilities made the game incredibly addictive.
Yeah, I don't understand the logic in picking the first one over the second one.
You know, it's not included there, but I think I know, and this is a bit troll bait, but I wonder if they're thinking, well, if there wasn't Civilization, there wouldn't have been a Civilization 2, so
Yes, but while the first one got off to a good start, 2 is the one that really started getting people into the whole one more turn.
Yeah.
Also, why is this only number 9?
Mm.
Most of the games ahead of it are pretty good.
Although some could have not been on the list at all.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah, because it's like we've got two entries that are basically, to me, two flavors of the same thing.
Well, it depends. So let's keep going. Anyway, Civ in 1991 is on the list.
Yes. Great. Quake 2. Speaking of one of the flavors of the same thing.
Actually, well, Quake 2 is very specific to what it is. It's very potent as a game, and mostly because of the multiplayer side. And it deserves definitely to be on the list, because without Quake and without the Quake engine, there would not be a lot of first-person shooters in the world. So maybe we do need to go back in time and stop that, but...
Number 7.
System Shock 2. Yay. It's on here. Sorry, you got your first-person shooter in my role-playing game, or it's the other way around, I'm not sure which, but it was also a horror game at the same time, so it hit a lot of different things, but it was good, that was the thing. Not that it wasn't buggy at times, but the mod community has put graphics updates and stuff, so you could still play it now, and it still wouldn't look as bad as you might think.
Well, I mean, graphics are graphics. Graphics does gameplay.
Number six.
Oh, another fun one. Grim Fandango. It's like, I'm glad at least one adventure-style game got on here.
Yeah, probably other ones that are better.
Yeah, because they even mentioned it in their same company that Monkey Island. I mean, if you're going to put one on there, it was freaking hilarious.
How do you pick one that's better than the other, though? I mean, it's really just a question of which one you happen to enjoy the most, really.
Yeah. Pirates or death?
The description of this video really doesn't outline the specific criteria, let alone the hierarchy of the criteria.
Yeah.
Other than the list was very difficult to put together. But definitely more criteria there that at least I hope they're taking into account, not just because it was their favorite, because they have some sort of emotional attachment to it.
Yeah, because seriously, number five should not be on the list.
Yeah.
It was not a great game.
Myst.
Yeah, if it was one of the later entries in the Myst series, maybe. I have a feeling this is the Civ effect that we had earlier, where they feel the need to put the first entry because it's an iconic series, but it's really not the best one in it.
The best thing about Myst is that with 1993 graphics, it was very, very graphical. The bad thing about Myst was they spent so much money on the graphics, they didn't fill it with content.
It was mostly ooh, shiny.
You know, jumping ahead just briefly to the honorable mentions, why don't we take that one out and put in either Age of Empires 2, The Age of Kings, or maybe even Command & Conquer Red Alert.
Mm.
That's your strategy bias talking.
Baldur's Gate also.
True, yeah.
Also an honorable mention.
Yeah, the honorable mentions are better than the actual lists.
And I wouldn't actually go with Need for Speed 3 Pursuit. I'm not sure if that's a... Actually, that would break. So the honorable mentions are actually specifically talking about ones that are later in the series.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
I have no issues with number 4 to number 1 on this list, though.
Number 4 is Diablo. Yeah, it's pretty iconic. And they only had one during that period. And I used to see people in the computer labs in college pretending they were doing other things. And oops, Alt-Tab, playing Diablo. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Whereas for me, when I was in high school, the game that's number 3 on the list is what a number of people were playing instead of doing their work.
Yeah, Doom. If we were going to have one of the id games on here, yeah, Quake 2, maybe not Doom. I think this is one of those, it's iconic, so we included it.
Yeah. The early 90s games really struggle to keep up with the late 90s games. It really progressed so much.
So there was a big shift in the late 90s when it came to what you could possibly even remotely do and what people could do on their own computers that they had at home. Not to mention this whole interwebby thing started showing up.
And I was going to say, number 2 is a great example of the things they could do with the better power. The original Half-Life at the time, everybody's going, what is this? Oh my God. Speaking of shiny.
It wasn't just shiny. It was shiny and content.
Yes. Wait. Plot? Plot with my shooting? What?
They have a plot. And the fact that it was moddable.
Yeah.
Fallout 2 was honorable mention.
For the 2000s.
At the beginning of this decade, we were nervous about the Y2K bug. Thankfully, our computers survived and we were able to play some great games on them. Welcome to WatchMojo.com, and today we'll be counting down our picks for the top 10 PC games of the 2000s. For this list, we chose the best PC games of the 2000s, ranked on how good they seemed at the time and how well they've held up. On top of our usual one game per franchise rule, since there were so many amazing titles that debuted simultaneously on the PC and on consoles, we gave priority to PC exclusives due to the fact that there were just too many games to squeeze into 10 slots.
Battlefield 2 is number 10.
So their point is the fact that you could go up to 64 people at the time?
Yeah.
It was multiplayer. It was at a time where multiplayer started becoming more normal.
I think it's important to preface this in that they were a little more specific in terms of what they were trying to accomplish here and how they tried to accomplish it.
Yeah, because frankly, from 2000 to 2010, there was, again, a major shift in tech.
Yeah.
Mostly on the graphics side.
I wouldn't touch number 9 with a 10-foot pole. But I can see why it's here, and that's The Sims 2.
Yeah, I understand why it's there, but let's not talk about it anymore, number 8.
Yeah. First Max Payne for number 8.
Boom! At the time, they had some bullet time stuff, but it was a first-person shooter where they tried a little bit more storytelling. It was almost the exact opposite of Battlefield plan. And there's this whole concept of third-person shooter versus first-person shooter. Eventually, there was a split where it was chosen one or the other.
On Nords, number 7 is another Baldur's Gate title, Baldur's Gate 2, Shadows of Om.
It's the first time that BioWare tried doing romances in games, I think. And, guys, I'm glad you've improved since then.
That is true.
Company of Heroes is number 6.
Played it. Wasn't really interested in it.
Sure, some of these were pretty good games and a lot of people enjoyed them. It's just if you don't play it yourself, it's hard to really grasp its place on the list. Now, number 5, most of us listening to or covering this podcast have probably heard of and played this game at least to a degree, and that would be the mighty Civilization IV.
Sid Meier's legendary series of turn-based strategy games have always been favorites of PC gamers, and once again, the new installment took the series to new heights. The title introduced 3D visuals to the series, as well as an easy-to-use new interface and a refinement of the health and happiness systems for your cities. Combine those with the most robust multiplayer the series has seen to date, with a tech tree that provides narration from Leonard Nimoy, and this game was the total package, and then some.
Now, it required but one more ingredient, a great leader, to build a legacy that would stand the test of time.
A little bit higher than Civ got in the 90s. You could make a case to put it higher, but...
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that it could be higher than.
Yeah. Number 4 is Deus Ex.
Just barely making the cutoff.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right, the 2000 range. Number 3, Diablo 2. My. A lot of hours spent in that one.
I would say Diablo 2 has way more time spent into it than Diablo 1 ever did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Multiplayer really pushed it. And, you know, when Diablo 3 comes out, people are like, yeah, I'm just going to play Diablo 2, thanks. And for some stupid reason, number 2.
Yep. Well, I know why it's here.
There's a reason it's here.
There's a good reason it's here, and that's World of Warcraft.
Yeah, it's there for a reason.
Yeah, one of the more played games of the decade, for certain.
But if they're going to put World of Warcraft on it, why did they not put Evercrack on the 90s list? The only reason World of Warcraft worked is because Evercrack had already broken ground on the concept.
Well, yeah, you could make a case for putting EverQuest in the 90s one, too.
Yeah. Their choices for honorable mentions are, like, what?
It should be the list again.
Portal? I mean, are you serious? That's way better than...
Morrowind! Come on!
Yeah. Elder Scrolls 3, why is that not on list?
Yes! Why not on list?
Elder Scrolls, period.
Bad list.
Yeah. Crysis? The thing about Crysis is... It wasn't a very popular game. It was like, ooh, shiny, but yeah. It required like a supercomputer just to try and run it, which meant that not a lot of people could play it.
And one of Phil's favorites, Unreal Tournament 2K4.
And I'm surprised the last honorable mention did not make the top 10.
What, COD?
Yeah.
Meh. I mean, yeah, it's a big franchise.
For that reason, based on their criteria.
So, Mr. L, what would you think about a redesign of Civ towards a more competitive game by introducing a system of pre-commanding your units before the fight and showing the fights after the turn? So the multiplayer simultaneous rounds would be fair and fast. I'm not entirely sure the words fair and fast would be used in that sort of system.
It might be neither.
Yeah, that too.
You're making a new game outright. There's, well,
the
fundamental... You could do it with a Civ theme, but that's a different game.
I don't think it would be more competitive, though. That's the thing. The core concept in the question is you don't actually move your units on your turn. It's entirely you set your orders and then hit end turn and see what happens between you and your opponent, whether or not you guys miss each other, because it could be completely happening. Where you run around the map, both clicking in the wrong direction, trying to attack each other. Could get real goofy.
Well, I mean, you're thinking about it in the framework of the current game, though, which would be the overt wrong approach. If you did that, you'd be guaranteed to have a terrible title. But there's nothing wrong, per se, with that kind of setup that has a lot more of a tactical level aspect to it with the same Civ theme, but it's a new game. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. What would you think of a new game made where the game worked this way? And it has potential. I mean, if you do the tactical element well, it could be a lot of fun, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that, like other games, where the armies on the main map, when they get into a fight, you get pushed into a tactical map, and then you use that sort of system between the two armies.
Yeah, that would not be fast, though.
No, definitely not be fast.
Fair or not, that would not be fast.
I mean, you want to change it so that you're basically both guessing what your opponent is going to do, but I don't see how that's any more fair than the current system. I mean, yes, people talk about pressing buttons fast, but that doesn't really matter as much if you switch from simultaneous to hybrid, because then no one has to worry about fast button press. There's ways to make multiplayer completely different and so that it can be more competitive, although I don't think that this plan is a way to make it more competitive. You just change the battle mechanics, but that doesn't change the fact that the game in general is slow and the game in general is big. So multiplayer games take a lot longer. If you would like to make a more competitive esports style game, then you have to go along the lines of Civ Rev. That is a much more competitive setup for esports. It's smaller, it's faster, it's easier to finish a game. And yes, there are other games that use systems like that. As Star Hope likes to point out, Endless Legend uses a system somewhat like that, where you basically just tell your units what they should do, and then you find out what actually happens.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe for right now, if this person wants to, and this is not exact, I don't know why it made me think of it exactly, but it just made me think of a return to the inability in MP to unend your turn. Just sounds like a takeoff of that,
yeah,
to be honest.
And realistically, that you're still going to have some issues of whether or not it's fair. If you're going based on multiplayer simultaneous, where everybody's units move at the same time, whose unit, in effect, eventually moves first? Because even if you do that, all of that, you can't simultaneously move stuff. Something has to eventually go first so that it can actually resolve things. So if the host goes first and their unit kills one of your units that you were expecting to use as a flanker for something else, and then that dominoes all the way through.
And if you're looking for fast, maybe a return to a turn timer that has a speed other than whatever we currently have in Civilization V.
Yeah, speed is more based on how much stuff you actually have to do in the game. So that's why I think you'd want to have more of a game like Civ Rev for console that has a slimmed down tech tree. Slim down set of mechanics so that you're not spending more time on empire building, you're spending more time on map stuff. Although it had its own problems, but that's a completely different story.
It's that time again where we all get to be together. The snow is falling in this frightful weather.
Matt Zed, what are the Polycast members' favorite Civ games to play and why? Well, I think that's partially dependent on when you ask the question, as in the year.
Yeah.
Even though I have been playing Civilization Beyond Earth because it is the latest, if I was to choose a favorite Civilization game right now, it would not be that. It would be Civilization V.
Yeah, if you go by what I play right now, it would definitely be Beyond Earth, because it's the only one I play. If you go by historically and number of hours invested in any one, then there's no question for me, Civ 4.
Yeah, I know I've played a lot more hours of 4 than I have a 5, but I think I've been enjoying the hours in a 5 more.
Well, they didn't say favorite Civ game right now, so it just asked which one.
Well, they asked to play, though, and I don't actually play Civ 4 any longer.
That's true.
Yeah,
we all did have a lot of fun playing Civ 4 multiplayer.
Yeah.
I took it as a present tense inquiry.
Well, then,
right now.
Beyond Earth.
Nope. I had to take it like it was meant and go with Civ Rev for console. And the only reason I say that is because it was quick, it was fast, and despite 2K's sheer lack of wanting to patch or maintain a community, a very large community formed around it, and it was much more fun to play with a lot of people, and it was also shorter, so we could actually do a lot more stuff, play quick games and get out and all that other fun stuff. So I think on that respect, for playing with other people, I go back to the concept that it was actually a lot of fun. And I did a lot of that before Civ 5 came out.
And in fact, you were first on Rivcast before you were ever on Polycast.
Yep. And that's why I would say it was a bit more favorite to play, because the game actually built a community around it, despite 2K's best interest to try and get rid of it, I think.
for me, when I look at played Civilization Revolution myself on the DS, so it was only ever the single player experience. But I think what the nail in the coffin, really, not the continued lack of support from 2K, but next gen consoles came out. CivRev came out in 2007, and it was going strong until the end of 2013 anyway, so it's pretty dang good.
Yep. Otherwise, Civ 3.
Imagine will not be joining us on the next season. No.
Burn him, Ethan.
Seriously, he's not a witch, he's escort.
Lol, the rage.
I know, at the time. Well, it's one of those things. We have to explain this to people who didn't play Civ 3. At the time, we were enjoying it, but it was very freaking frustrating. So that when we got to Civ 4 and played it, and then you look back on it, you want to kill it even harder.
Yeah, when we talked about the WatchMojo.com list for top 10 PC games, and they had their criteria about how good they seemed at the time and how well they've held up. Yeah, Civ 3 does not do very well in the second half of that.
It did not hold up once you had something better to compare it to.
The other thing that happened with Civilization 3 is it had some development cycle difficulties because of major changes in key personnel. There was a continuity issue there that I think also hurt it. So let's look at it this way. Civilization 3 helped ensure that there was still sufficient interest in the franchise for there to be a Civilization 4. Civilization Revolution, Civilization 5, Civilization Beyond Earth, Future, etc., etc. So there we go.
In a cozy sweater, singing songs by the fire. Hear them sleigh bells ringing and sipping on apple cider. Presents under the tree, stealing kisses from me because it's Christmas. Yeah. Baby, it's Christmas. Yeah.
And now, speaking of rage.
Well, you should see the comments on the video. People raged because somebody wasn't number one. And I'm like, that's kind of minor, all things considered, guys. So we had a list of top 10 iconic game creators.
You know the games, but do you know the names?
Number 10 with Sid. It's like, well, considering the other names on this list, yeah, but he could have been a little higher.
Could have been a lot higher. He did way more than some of these people.
Yeah, there's definitely at least a little bit of console bias on this list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, iconic video game creators, so not just PC.
Well, yeah, you should be able to cross genres based on that.
Oh, yes.
For this list, we're looking at the top 10 lead developers, designers, or directors who created memorable and enduring franchises that still affect the way that video games are developed today.
See, that criteria seems a little different from the actual ultimate top 10.
Yeah.
It was really our feeling that turn-based was not just because we couldn't do real-time. It was a genre that made sense, that allowed a lot of people to play who might not be comfortable in a real-time game.
Sid Meier's made a name for himself by creating some of the most addictive and rewarding strategy games of all time. And, you know, stamping his name on every single one of them. Sid Meier's Pirates, Sid Meier's Civilization, Sid Meier's Railroads. If you're a fan of the strategy genre, you've almost certainly known his name. His games combine simulation and strategy in a way that give players ultimate power. And who doesn't occasionally want a little bit of that?
Who drinks the water I shall give him, says the Lord, will have a spring inside him welling up for eternal life.
The title is they're talking about iconic creators, but then also who have influenced things today, like they have to still be working to count.
Yeah.
Well, no, the things they built should still be affecting how other games are built.
That's different in my mind. Somebody who programmed a great game versus somebody who's just really out there in the community such that a lay person is more likely to recognize that name than others.
Number 9?
Yeah.
Well, he gave the people the original addictive little puzzle game that's had many iterations over the years.
Tetris was a great game. So the person's name is Alexey Pajitnov.
I think he did all right.
Tetris, iconic game, yes. And recently he's doing Hexic and Hexic 2, which are basically just derivative work. So I don't see how he's done iconic stuff compared to Sid, whose list of games in various genres and other such things.
You're saying he should have been an honorable mention.
Yeah, he made Tetris. That's cute. But this is literally a one-hit wonder.
Number 8.
Orin Spector, who was a producer in the Ultima series of games early on, and then was on Deus Ex and Thief and did Epic Mickey. So yeah, he's got a lot of reasons to be in here. But the thing is, because they included Ultima in that, and this is what got me to kind of froth a little bit, because it make it sound like he was responsible for Ultima, but it's somebody else entirely who doesn't even show up in honorable mentions. And I'm like, how did you get in this list with Ultima coming up and not mention Richard Garriott? And he's making a new version of it lately, and I'm just like, what, guys?
Mackie just can't even.
Anyway.
Oh, Gabe.
Number 7.
This is the one that got the people in the comments to rage because he wasn't number 1. Seriously, guys. Steam is awesome. He can be on here because of Steam. He does not have to be number 1.
I'm pretty sure he's on here because of Half-Life.
Yeah, I know, but
there's no mention of Steam in that.
They should mention Steam.
They mentioned Valve, because Valve made Portal. They made all sorts of stuff that were completely different from what other people were making. That's a good reason for be on the list.
But Steam is the gift that keeps on giving. It keeps on taking from my wallet.
Steam, it's better to give than receive. It's better to give us your money.
Yeah, than receive a game.
Wait a minute. It's a little
game thing. Don't worry about it. Just hand over the money. It's okay.
Number 6, and higher not because I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, Will Wright. Both SimCity and The Sims. What? Mm-hmm. You can't make him higher?
And some other stuff, I think. He Score. Made The Sims. Yeah, let's just pretend that never happened. Because if you add Spore to the list of things he's done, that would actually shove him below Sid.
SimCity, SimAnt, SimThis. This is why we know with The Sims. Sim people while we're at it.
Yep. He built the whole game genre around creepy little people.
What, gamers?
No.
Oh.
The not gamers that were allowed to play games now. Little sim craziness world.
Number 5.
Kojima. For those at home who are going, what? Metal Gear Solid, okay.
Metal Gear Solid, other stuff. The guy is crazy, but...
He's the good kind of crazy.
Yeah. The only problem with Metal Gear stuff is the fact that they look a lot more like he wants to make a movie and somebody told him that he wasn't allowed and he said, screw you, I'm going to do it anyways.
But that's why it's so great.
Yeah.
And we're speaking of Hideo Kojima. How close am I to the pronunciation?
Pretty close there, yeah.
I don't know.
Woohoo! Number 4.
Shinji Mikami.
First time I read it, I'm like, Shinji Mackie. What?
I'm not Shinji.
Otherwise known as Resident Evil and or Devil May Cry.
Things that started things and people built on.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3.
Hironobu Sakaguchi, better known as Final Fantasy.
Mm.
You know, things that have a lot of things.
Yeah, but Final Fantasy's getting kind of, like, they could have ended it, the final one, about 10 ago.
But the first 6, well, maybe even up to about 8, were still pretty good.
And well,
still,
you could skip
even 9 and 10 were good. As long as you don't count 10-2 or go past it, then you have a pretty good series.
Number 2.
I thought this actually said John Cusack for a bit. I was confused for a little while.
Unless he has a secret life as a game programmer, I don't know, but John Carmack does. Really? Between him and Romero, they're basically id. So Doom and Quake and Wolfenstein and everything else.
Commander Keen.
Yes, I knew one of you was going to bring that up. Somebody have the honorable mentions list?
Yu Suzuki, Peter Molyneux, Gunpei Yaoki. Kenji Inafune? I know I really butchered that one. And then Tim Schafer. I think I was all right on that last one. And then number 1, I'm like, okay, fine, I understand.
Shigeru Miyamoto, Mr. Mario himself.
Mario!
Well, Nintendo. I don't know if he's the icon of the video game industry. I mean, he is iconic in many different ways, but not
he's
like
a good
Mario...
candidate for it, but...
It's not like Mario's gotten any different over the years. But yeah, I mean, he's done a lot. And he makes games that are meant to be fun, period. And
yes, we can give him a lot of credit for that.
And he's a lot more willing to speak out his thoughts to the community than some of the other names on the list, too. Which is probably another reason why he's number 1 here.
But listeners, don't worry. Sid, you are the one. Okay. Moving on.
Creepy.
It's the greatest holiday. Goodwill and peace on earth. Finally, they don't seem so
fire away, stocked and stuffed with candy canes.
Why I Die. The theme is the future, Civ Beyond Earth. Anything on Beyond Earth is the future, and the game is set in the future, Civ 6. What features would the panel like to see in the future release of Civ? And with predictions from all on when the next release will drop. Winner gets to eat a donut on air in the future. Or do retrospective.
Oh, in the future.
The year in Civ.
Not now.
And you see, I love that. Or is the operative word here.
Or just skip what I just wrote and do something the exact opposite.
I went with the or, the retrospective. As soon as he said the year in Civ, thank you, Why I Die, for a certain inspiration.
Come on, man.
Dan. Is it a list?
It is a top 10 list, Mackie. How did you know? He talked about the best moments and worst moments. You'll be happy that I'm not doing my initial list, which was I was going to do initial top 10 worst moments and top 10 best moments, and then I actually couldn't come up with enough moments. So,
turns out he was aptly named.
Number 10 to number 1. I'm not going to talk about them in any detail, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to reference what episodes of Polycast you can go listen to over at thepolycast.net to listen to more. And, of course, I had to mention the domain. I hadn't done that yet. I haven't done that in a while, actually. I have not been living up to my contractual obligations. Again, this is either best or worst or somewhere in between, depending on your perspective. In other words, it was newsworthy, noteworthy. We talked about it. Number 10, No Strategic View in Civilization Beyond Earth, episode 212. Number 9, release of and backlash against Civilization Revolution 2 from episodes 205 and 206.
Oh, see, I thought you were actually going to say Civ Beyond Earth, but okay.
Yeah, for a minute I thought he was going to say that too, and then he said Civ Rev 2, and I was like, oh, okay.
Number 8, the shutdown of the GameSpy multiplayer service that affected Civilization 4, episodes 197 and 198.
I think that was a good thing.
Yeah, get GameSpy the hell out of my Civ 4.
Plus, GameSpy was basically shut down anyway, so it's not like they couldn't do anything about it.
That's why I was the multiplayer service. And again, I am not saying whether it's best or worst. I have no opinion.
Right.
Number 7, the delay and then release of the Linux and Mac ports of Civilization Beyond Earth. So episode 210, and we're going to include the Christmas special 2014 here, because on the 18th of December, hello Mac port for Civilization Beyond Earth. Wow.
Merry Christmas.
Exactly, and a Happy New Year. Number 6, removal of direct IP, Pit Boss for MP in Steam-based Civilization 4 versions, episode 204.
That was related to the GameSpy thing.
It was.
It doesn't deserve a separate listing.
Oh, yes. Yes, it absolutely does.
Wasn't there some Pit Boss raging at the time?
Yeah, because there was the shutdown of the GameSpy service and then the separate action with regards to the Steam-based Civ 4 version. That's why I listed them separately. Number 5, Civilization 5 released on Linux. Talked about it episode 206, kind of like funny.
Finally got around to it, eh?
Number 4, Firaxis Games live streams we discussed between episodes 208 and 212. Number 3, the release of the Fall Civilization 5 patch. Ooh.
The one that broke shit.
That's what some people started describing MP after the patch. Yes.
But it wasn't that big of a patch, though. It was just kind of like, hey, we did a couple things.
How did you break things at the same time?
Number 2, the announcement to release of Civilization Beyond Earth, discussed between April and October 2014. That's right. I did not put it at number 1. What could it be? But we have to have honorable mentions. Polycast episode 200 with Firaxis Games participation. That was episodes 200 and 205. The ongoing development of Civilization Online, episodes 196, 202, 206, and 216. And the first Civilization Beyond Earth patch. We talked about in episode 215. So number 1, holding of Firaxicon in September. Episodes 209, 211, 212, 214, 215, and 16.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Polycast.net.
Hey, Dan, would you like an alliance against Matt Jin?
You mean with you?
Oh, it doesn't really matter.
I like the idea. Does it have to be with you specifically?
Come on, Dan. This is a dog pile. You don't really care who is helping you deal it. You're just dog piling.
Are you trying to make fake coalitions again?
Yes. I feel that you have expanded very aggressively.
But you see, in this arrangement, we're either unsuccessful and we're taken out by Imagine, or we are successful, and then what are you going to do?
Oh, we'll worry about that later.
Yeah, the later part. I'm thinking a bit longer-term strategy here as well.
Well, certainly you can have contingencies, and I'll have my contingencies. Mackie, would you like to dogpile Dan?
That could be taken the wrong way.
Really, Mackie? We're getting this from you? Really?
This is awesome, because I love that Mackie associates that inference with me and Dogpile. I think I've won. I have my Christmas present. Thank you, Mackie.
Thank you. You shouldn't have said that. You done goofed. It's okay, though.
Hey, everybody. We're done.
Yeah. That's not a proper... What are you doing?
You can do better than that.
Okay, everybody. This has been Polycast Christmas Special 2014. We, of course, have been talking about all sorts of random junk, and probably you. Not necessarily the same thing. We have answered all your questions. I have been joined by the usual Dan Quick.
From head to mistletoe.
Makalua.
I really need more coffee to deal with this.
Jimmy and team.
Have a happy and safe holiday, everybody. Aw.
Yeah, it's true.
And this was me saying, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, see you next year, or something.
Well, don't sound so enthusiastic about it. Yeah, Merry Christmas or something, whatever, guys.
Whatever. See you next time.
Oh, we're just waiting for Phil and Mackie. Okay. All right, well.
Don't mind me, I'm just redesigning the entire trade route system for Beyond Earth.
That was an interesting time to join the call.
Yeah, 3, 2, 1, click that button.
Click it good. Clicking a button.
Someone's happy for buttons this morning.
Noted in the list. Civ 4, Civ 5, and BE. One mechanic make bleh, 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 words. One game mechanic each.
I'd like to thank all the other factions for funding my civilization. I mean, you know what I mean. Bleh.
Your sponsor?
Yes, thank you.
This is also an opportunity for Mackie to rage on a Christmas special. Mm-hmm.
Oh, this list. Yeah, spoiler alert, it's here later in the list, so.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Which list are you looking at?
90s.
So am I, and it's not on the list.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
That's what I just looked at that earlier. That's what. Okay, spoilers, that's what number one was.
It's an honorable mention.
No, it's not.
It's not
in the top 10.
No, that's not number one either.
Crap, what the hell? Well, now I'm so confused.
It's okay. It is in there. It's just not number one. It's just the last one mentioned before number one.
Oh.
You said horror, right?
Horror? Yes, horror.
Okay.
Sorry. No, it's not.
One track mind.
We're not talking about certain kinds of tactics in Europa, imagine.
Okay.
Number 5. Don't everyone rush to say the name.
Somebody have the honorable mentions list?
Sure, why not? Somebody, some jerk, a couple of people.
Oh no!
And one big ass.
I know the ass one's best. Good start, terrible finish.
That's not what you want her to say. Last user submitted.
True, really, you don't. In a lot of things.
Dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot. Who taught Dan to do top 10 lists with honorable mentions? I think this was a bad thing that happened this year.
We get to blame Watch Mojo.
So have we fleshed this out sufficiently?
Are we going to Disney already? Is that our Christmas present? Dan, send us all to Disney?
Imagination Disney. You can think about it right now. Enjoy.
Imagine.
I already went, so I don't know what you guys are doing.
I live kind of close to it, so I've been there a few times.
Brag.
I'm still laughing at the way Imagine did the honorable mentions list.
These editorializations brought to you by Years of Rage.
I'm just going to point out, I actually don't know who the three people I said that were some people. I don't actually remember.
No, I had a feeling it was soup.
Look, the fact that you described them as some people suggested to me you didn't really know much about them.
Yeah, I have no ill intent towards these people.
But the other two. Yeah.
So imagine what you're saying is the people you didn't know, there's no major incidents that have shaped your relationship.
Oh, back to diplomacy, are we?
It's all good.
With a stick. Our first episode recording in 2015 is the 10th of January, so we'll see you in 3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I should probably know this.
We talked about this. Take better notes.
I don't remember.
No.
It doesn't matter. I'll probably be here.
Probably. I focus on that one word.
It's always probably, though, because sometimes random crap happens, but normally I make it.
Well, stop hanging out near the monkey cage.
Record date December 20th, 2014. Music in alphabetical order by title. At Christmas Time, Sarah Evans. Baby It's Christmas, Jesse James Decker. Christmas Coming Home, Lennon Mazey. Deck the Halls, Kevin MacLeod. Santa Tell Me, Ariana Grande. Must Be Christmas, Band of Merrymakers. Something About the Holidays, Elizabeth Chan. When Christmas Comes, Los Campesinos. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.
Santa, tell me.